Hello, good morning, and welcome to another international edition of Word on the Street. I'm Rob Lawrence. Last time I went west to Australia to report on the Paramedics International Conference. This time we've turned about and are facing east and the ground zero of the Ebola outbreak in the West African nation of Sierra Leone. I'm going to be talking to British paramedic Peter Simpson. Peter is the lone volunteer who has probably gone on the adventure of a lifetime and is currently resident in Freetown, Sierra Leone, helping establish an ambulance service. Yes, that's right, this country has no EMS system until this week. The Sierra Leone Ambulance Service, self-titled the Ebola Warriors, are the front line in the Ebola battle. Peter and his warriors are inspirational, they're brave, and they're leading the charge in what very really could be a deadly occupation. I started by asking Pete to tell us his backstory.
Worked for the East of England Ambulance Service over in the UK. Been there since 1986, so now considered to be part of the furniture. 28 years. Career history came in at the very bottom and have worked my way up. Currently, I'm the Clinical Operations Manager, a role that has many tasks from still responding to blue light calls, which I thoroughly enjoy. Keeps me fresh, keeps my hand in on what's new on the ground. And then I get involved in stuff like training as well, which is good. Training, recruitment, education, mentoring, supervision, the whole bag, really. You want to join the ambulance service, I'll train you, I'll recruit you, and make sure that you're on the right pathway. So that's my kind of background. Basically a paramedic who got lucky and I've had a most wonderful career. I still get a buzz going to work. After 28 years, I still get excitement coming to work and think it's still the very best job I've ever had.
So we know you're the lone guy, Pete, but so what prompted you, a medic from Norfolk in England, to go out there and do what you're doing?
Watching the devastation in Sierra Leone to the people, the infrastructure, the healthcare system, and the whole fabric of society on the news every night, and then cuddling up with my wife and going to bed, and then waking up the next morning, and everything was right in my world, and in Sierra Leone, another 100 people had died from this absolutely appalling virus that seems to have gripped their nation, an impoverished nation with a very fragile healthcare system. And I thought, do you know what, I want to go do something to help. Now, I can either help at a distance, and I understand many people do help at a distance, there's nothing wrong with that, and I applaud that. You know, they give a technical advice back from their own countries, and you know, that's very useful. I'm over here in Freetown at the moment, and I'm getting technical advice from the guys and girls back in England, and it's vital to help shape the standard operating procedures and infection control procedures that we need to put into place here, especially for the ambulances, which are being written as we speak. So I wanted to come over here and make a difference.
So you're there, but so what did the folks back home actually say to you before you left?
Some said I was mad. Others said I was driven. No one said I was wise. Even the other paramedics, which surprised me. I thought, you know, the compassion shared by other NHS and healthcare workers, certainly the ones that I was around in England, would have felt the same as I did. But the feeling is not shared globally amongst healthcare staff that coming to Sierra Leone is a wise thing to do. I think that's driven partly by the media, partly the hysteria whipped up by governments around the world, countries around the world, certain states in America. Some countries have even put visa bans on people either leaving or entering the country, either leaving their country and going to West Africa or coming from West Africa to Sierra Leone. So here I was.
So you're on the ground now. I mean, what do you think of the place?
First impression, got off the plane at Lungi Airport, came over on a British transport plane, a C-17, like a big Hercules freighter, out of Bryce Norton, stepped onto the tarmac at Sierra Leone and thought, what in the world have I done? There's no going back. So I suppose, I think the tiredness, a little bit of paranoia, a little bit of fear, chuck them all together, and then you've got probably the wrong mix of my first impression. I think it would have been a long flight, several delays before we got here. And quite tired. The Welcome to Sierra Leone sign is still up at the airport, although the tourist information office is closed. So, that was kind of the couple of things I first noticed. Nice guy from ISAT gave me a lift. I thought Freetown was about 20 minutes from the airport at Lungi, but it was 3 hours, which gave us an opportunity to drive through some of the poorest regions of Sierra Leone, past a lot of people who, at the moment, there's very little work. There's very little movement of people. It's been sort of almost banished. People have got to stay in their communities and stay where they are. So it's very difficult for them to make a living. Very little work. They live off $1.25 a day. They are that poor. You know, trying to think, I spent equivalent of probably $5 a day just on coffee back in the UK at Starbucks and Costa's. So that makes you feel a little humble that they live off $1.25. They eat basically rice and not much else with it. Although to say that, there were many, many goats wandering around in the road on the 3-hour journey from Lungi to Freetown. Within 5 minutes, we'd been stopped at a roadblock by a policeman. There was an ambulance. Well, actually, it was a hearse that had been called to pick up somebody who had died from suspected Ebola. So within 5 minutes of landing in the country, we had stopped and we were opposite in the road watching the crew dressed in full PPE go in to remove a body, and which is immediately taken away in a bag for burial. And that's the dawn of realization. You're like, oh my God, this viral disease absolutely gripped this country. If not for the number of deaths from the actual disease, the fear of catching it and death, it is tangible. You can taste it in the air. Nobody touches anymore. We don't shake hands. You place your hand across your chest. When you say hello to someone, everyone's washing all the time. You're getting your temperature checked half a dozen times a day. And there was an air, certainly in those first few days when I was in the country, that there was an air of fear, really, by the population that, you know, they had little or no control. The reality is there is control over the virus. It is starting to be contained, and it will be beaten. I think now the message back to the people who live here is, you know, there's a team of very highly dedicated, very skilled people from many agencies in the country, and they will beat this disease with your help, and they will contain it, they will control it, and they will beat it. So the big message to the country now is actually not to not be vigilant, it's good to be vigilant, but to actually be aware that the people on the ground have got plans and they've got mechanisms in place, and that Ebola in West Africa, certainly in Sierra Leone, can be beaten, will be beaten, and has to be beaten.
You said, oh my God, you used the word tangible fear. So, Pete, you know, are you scared?
I was scared when I arrived at Lungi Airport. I'm scared when I arrived at the hotel. And I think because of the tiredness and because of, I don't know whether that exacerbates paranoia or fear, the porter at the hotel took my suitcase, so he held the handle, you know what I mean, and that kind of stuff. Somebody's taken my suitcase, he's held the handle, what if he's got Ebola? If I touch the handle of my suitcase, I'm going to catch Ebola and then I'm going to die. I mean, none of that makes sense. There's no science to support it, and you can hear an ambulance actually coming past now, excuse me. If you hear one in the background, that's another ambulance going out on another call in the capital city. They have 16 ambulances. 16 ambulance drivers and 22 nurses make up their ambulance service. Back to the suitcase. I then cleaned it with a Clenel wipe and cleaned it down and cleaned the handle. And then in the morning, the first thing I did was took my temperature, and I do it twice a day, and you kind of think, you know, just get a grip of this, work with the science, not the fear. The science says you have to have come into contact with blood or bodily fluid, diarrhea, vomiting. Someone needs to have actually been sick on you, over you. You need to have come into contact with the virus itself. And so the science didn't support the fact that I was going to catch Ebola if I touched the handle of my suitcase, but fear does weird things with the mind.
So you're there on the ground, you've seen the people. So how are the population bearing up?
The side of Sierra Leone they don't show on the news is the beautiful beaches, that smiling, happy people. I say happy with inverted commas, but they seem to be happy. I wouldn't say they were content living on $1.25 a day and being hungry all the time, but they seem to have nothing, or if they have very little at all, they seem to be happy. Certainly happier than a lot of the guys back home in England. And I'm not quite sure where that comes from. I guess wealth doesn't automatically guarantee happiness. I dare say poverty doesn't guarantee happiness either, but They sometimes seem to remain, somehow seem to remain positive about life, positive about their lot. They're incredibly polite and just some of the nicest, friendliest people I've ever met.
There are all sorts of stories, Pete, about life in Western Africa. Ebola aside, do you actually feel safe?
Two nights ago, I got locked out of my hotel. Imagine the scene. You're in a town, or a city of 3 million people that doesn't have any streetlights. There are potholes everywhere. They're not great on the roads. To be fair, the roads are full of potholes. And potholes everywhere, and I go back to the hotel. It's late, it's dark. The taxis drop me off. I can't get in. So the hotels have got wire, 12-foot walls, barbed wire on the fences. So they're heavily protected. I'm not sure, maybe a throwback to the issues and problems I had in Sierra Leone before, but certainly it feels safe to me now anyway. Well, I couldn't get in the hotel. So it's late, it's dark, it's night. I'm in one of the ghetto areas, or the townships, I think they call them here, of Sierra Leone. And then out of the dark come three guys. And my first thought is, I'm not going to see the wife again, or the kids. They probably got machetes, and that's probably going to be the end of me. They're going to take my phone, my wallet, and you're never going to see little old Pete again. So as they approached, I'm like, all these thoughts are flooding through your mind. You're like, I didn't want it to end like this. And then they came up. There was no machete in their hand. They wanted to know what I was doing. And I told them I was locked out of the hotel. Couldn't get the night porter to open the door. So then the three of them helped each other, and climbed on top of a lorry. And then from the very top of the lorry, they could see over the 12-foot wall. They could see the night porter. So they started shouting his name. They knew who he was. Woke him up. He opened the door. I got in the hotel. I thanked the guys. Went in. And then felt incredibly guilty, because my first thought was not that these people were going to help me. My first thought was these people were going to harm me. Again, paranoia. Not a proud moment, but you know, you reflect and look back and go, they really are friendly, friendly people.
So just to translate, Pete, you used a very English word there, lorry. Lorry, for our international listeners, of course, is an 18-wheeler or a truck. You told me before when we were talking that you refer to the staff of the fledgling ambulance service as Ebola warriors. They're very brave people. But you're there doing this from scratch, creating an ambulance service. So what is on your to-do list?
When I came to Sierra Leone, one of the first things that struck me about the ambulance service was that prior to actually the Ebola outbreak, they didn't have one. The perception that a country cannot have an ambulance service and that people just die in the street, trapped in cars they cannot get out of. Just, I don't know, I find it as a paramedic, and I know the EMS people around the world, we just find it almost unreal, unbelievable, but true. Since Ebola, they now have 16 ambulances. I know it doesn't sound many, but they didn't have any. They have 16 ambulances, 16 ambulance drivers, 22 nurses. They're going to receive training. We're in emergency medical care. We're going to build them their first ambulance station here in Freetown, Sierra Leone, with facilities to effectively, when we leave, ensure that the ambulance service here continues. It doesn't die with the virus. The virus dies, the ambulance service carries on. That's the plan. Certainly in talking with the people here from all of the organisations and charities, that's certainly what we want. It's what we've had discussions with some of the higher ranking people within the government. Obviously the focus at the moment is to beat Ebola. But the legacy could be, in some weird and very bizarre way, that after this virus has been contained, controlled and eliminated, that there will be an ambulance service. The roads are being built where there were no roads to get to hospitals that were never there in the past. The staff here are receiving training and equipment in things that they could only have imagined. So it is a kind of spin-off of this entire horrible episode for these people, that in some bizarre way their country will have a more robust infrastructure to help them cope and deal with other things that will come down their way, as it does in many countries. So Sierra Leone could be a better place. It's hard to say a better place, isn't it? Sierra Leone will be able to cope better, I think, with the difficulties of day-to-day life.
So, Peter, you have a platform to talk right now to the EMS world. Before we go, what are your final thoughts in this edition? And I hope we come back and talk to you sometime soon.
We need people. We need trained clinicians to come and help more than anything. We need doctors. We need nurses. We need lab technicians. We need ancillary staff. We need medics, techs, EMTs. We need all of you. And we need you to come now. We can contain this disease and we can beat it, but we can't do it without your help. We need you to come. My final closing thought is, when Ebola has gone and been beaten, which it will, come here on holiday. It's fantastic. When you do come on holiday, don't forget to bring your surfboard, because this is some of the best surf in the world here on these absolutely idyllic, beautiful beaches. So let's rid Ebola of this world, and let's put Sierra Leone back firmly on the map.
Peter, thank you very much for talking to me. And I hope to talk to Peter again in a week or so and really get into how things are going out there in terms of the technical operation of creating and running an ambulance service, and of course how the guys, the Ebola warriors, are going out and recovering patients and bringing them back to the hospitals in Freetown, Sierra Leone. You have to ask yourself out there, would I? Could I do that? Well, Peter did, and he is. And for that, we take the hat of the EMS world off to him. I've known Peter actually for 10 years. I was impressed as his boss with him when I met him first time, and I'm even more impressed as his friend now. And so I'd also like to give a shout out to the East of England Ambulance Service and their chief executive, Dr. Anthony Marsh, for allowing Peter to go and do this. And again, on behalf of all of us, I think, thank you very much for that. Anyway, as I said, I hope to come back and talk to Peter again in a couple of weeks' time and bring it back as a Word on the Street broadcast. In the meantime, this has been a Word on the Street broadcast. I'm Rob Lawrence. This is a world-class EMS production of the Richmond Ambulance Authority in association with CAMES, the Coalition of Advanced EMS Systems. Until next time, bye for now.